agriculture, arguably one of mankind's greatest achievements. It has enabled us to reach staggering population sizes and serves as the backbone of our civilization. Ultimately, it can be argued that it is agriculture that has enabled us to defy gravity, map the moon, and split the atom. It is often thought that humans are the only species to have cultivated another organism. Yet, we were beaten to the punch in this regard by the leafcutter ant. Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Secrets of the Animal Kingdom, Unearthed. Today, we will be looking at the leafcutter ant. Notice there I did not mention any single species, because in this episode, we will not be examining a single ant species. Instead, we will be looking at all of the leafcutter ants as a group, with a focus on the best studied species, Attacephalotus. This video will also not have a very depressing conservation section at the end, because this group is more or less not threatened, and I want to talk about how awesome they are. With that out of the way, let us start with the taxonomy of this group. The term leafcutter ant is a non-generic name that refers to 47 different ant species that use leaves as a food source. These species fall under one of two genera, Atta and Acromyrmex. These two genera are similar in appearance, but can be distinguished by two factors. Firstly, Atta ants have three spines protruding from their belly compared to Acromyrmex, which have four, and the exoskeleton is generally rougher in Acromyrmex than in Atta. This group is one of the most wildly successful groups in the history of the Earth. They have absolutely massive population sizes and are the dominant herbivores across much of the New World. Leafcutter ants have absolutely massive colonies. In fact, they form arguably the largest societies on Earth, after humans. Their colonies can have several million workers each, are many meters deep and across, and are divided into intricate networks of chambers, tunnels, and galleries, each serving various distinct functions. Some chambers may be used for growing larvae, others could be used for growing the fungus gardens, still others could be used for waste disposal. The entire colony, like in all other ants, can be divided into the queen and the workers. The queen is the only member of the colony that will ever reproduce, like in all other ants. In case you are wondering, this is favored by natural selection because, in ants, sisters are more closely related to each other than parents are to their offspring in other species. Normally, siblings share half their genes with each other and parents share half their genes with their offspring. However, in ants and other eusocial insects like bees, sisters, yes, specifically sisters, share 75% of their genes with each other. All worker ants are female, and so the worker ant's best way of passing on its genes is not to mate and reproduce itself, but to help its mother, the queen, reproduce. This is why ants seem to have no sense or regard for their own self-being. Even if a worker dies in defense or support of the queen, that is still, evolutionarily speaking, worthwhile. Next, we will come to the social structures that the workers can be divided into. Firstly, leafcutter ants are extremely polymorphic. The width of the heads of the workers can vary from 0.6 to 4.5 millimeters. In other words, the largest workers can have heads up to 7.5 times as large as the smallest workers. They can broadly be divided into four main castes by their size. In order, from largest to smallest, they are the soldiers. These, when fully grown, can have massive heads of up to 3 millimeters and are almost exclusively engaged in defense against particularly large or dangerous enemies, and they are only found in mature colonies. Next, we have the foragers and excavators, which have a head size averaging around 2.2 millimeters. They explore and cut vegetation, fight intruders, and help dig the nest. Next, we have the within-the-nest generalists. These have an average head size of 1.4 millimeters and have a wide range of roles, ranging from taking care of the queen, transporting and taking care of fungi, degrading vegetation before putting it to use, transporting other workers, etc. Lastly, we have the tiniest workers with a head size of around 1 mm. They specialize in care of the fungal garden and feeding larvae. These castes are not fixed, and there are intermediate ants with some roles from two different castes. However, as the size of a leafcutter ant increases, the workers tend to shift from one set of tasks to another. While these are the castes into which leafcutter ants can be divided based on size, another distinct caste has been observed in Atacephalotus. The fungal gardens that this species cultivates produce waste, which must be removed, as it is hazardous and contains pathogens that can harm both the ants and their cultivated fungi. Managing the spread of disease is extremely important for this species, because an epidemic that wipes out the fungus that the leafcutter ant relies on for food could lead to the entire colony starving to death. Therefore, leafcutter ant colonies have specific chambers for waste disposal in order to prevent pathogens from spreading. To further prevent contamination, the ants that deal with the waste are their own separate caste. These garbage ants hardly ever leave the heap, and they're essentially bullied by the other ants into staying in the heap. In fact, their fellow workers may even tear them to shreds if they move out of the garbage heap. Brutal. Next, we come to the agricultural systems of the leafcutter ants. First, let us start with its foraging patterns. They are prolific foragers, being able to strip entire trees clean of vegetation as an army of millions descend on it over multiple days. The foragers follow trails marked by pheromones to the trees and plants that they are to forage in. Usually, the foragers bring back leaf fragments that they have cut back to the nest themselves, but they sometimes may pass on their leaf fragments to another ant who takes them home. If the foragers are unable to enter the nest because of a bottleneck caused by an abundance of leaves, then they drop the leaf fragment outside the nest so that it can be easily retrieved later. Soldier ants, the large workers, defend the trail from any predators that might dare challenge the leafcutter ant's mastery of the jungle. They are not particularly selective concerning the plants that they forage, meaning that they also target agricultural plants, making them a very annoying pest as they can strip entire fields bare in days. One interesting thing about leafcutter ants is that they seem to prefer to forage a fair distance away from their nest, often passing by plants close to the nest to attack another plant of the same species that is further away. One possible explanation for this trend is that it might even out the pressure from foraging across their range. This is also supported by the fact that larger colonies tend to forage further away from the nest. They also forage mostly during the nighttime and not in the day. A potential reason for this is that leafcutter ants get attacked by diurnal parasitoid insects during the day when they get out of their nest. While the workers get some food from leaf sap as they are cutting the leaves, most of the leafcutter ants' nourishment comes from the fungus gardens that they grow using the cut leaves. The fungus in question here is primarily Lycogaricus gangliflorus. I don't know if I pronounced that right. And the fungal cultures the leafcutter ant grows are remarkably free of any contamination. When the leaf fragments are brought into the nest, they are processed before they are used to grow fungus. The fragments are first cut into smaller pieces. This probably increases the efficiency of fungal growth, but it does take a lot of energy to do. The ants seem to lick the leaf fragments, especially the freshly cut leaf edges, probably to kill off any bacteria or fungus that might already be on it, because their saliva is known to be antiseptic. During this process, they also scrape the surface of the leaf and puncture holes in the leaf, probably to increase the available surface area for the fungus. They also deposit some secretion from their abdomen onto the leaf, probably because that secretion helps in digesting/decomposing the leaf. After all this is done, the by now well-processed leaf fragment is inserted into the wall of the chamber and a ball of fungus is planted on it. The garden is taken care of as it grows, and the ants eat the fungus for food. As we have seen in this episode, the leafcutter ant, despite possessing a tiny brain, shows behaviors and societies that rival and sometimes even exceed humans in their complexity and scale. For example, culturing just one species of fungi with no contamination is a challenge for even biologists. They are a great representative of the ant kingdom in all its organizational prowess. In their role as the dominant herbivores of the New World, they demonstrate the impact that even the tiniest species on Earth can have, and act as a reminder of how nature always has another wonder, another mystery up its sleeve for us humans to marvel at. So, I really hope you found that video interesting. Do not forget to like and subscribe and share this podcast with your friends and family. I wish you all a belated Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and I'll see you next time.